We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And big show coming up, Adam. First of all, what's up?
A big show.
Yeah, it is. We teased this interview during the Rapid Reactions pod, but we're excited to talk to Leon Johnson. Leon, terrific running back from the early and mid-1990s for Carolina, now living in Oklahoma, as you will hear. Talked to Leon and had a bunch of fun. You'll enjoy that. We'll do a final wrap-up of that 56-45 win over Virginia Tech on Saturday. Have a story time today. And, Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
All right. See?
I've got a how can you justify
ooh,
that?
Ooh. Adam's eyes got a little bigger when he said that. I can tell you're slightly heated, Adam.
I'm trying to keep it at room temperature.
So, a lot coming up. Before we get to any of that, let me remind you that we're brought to you by the College Foundation of North Carolina. Visit cfnc.org for everything you need to plan, apply, and pay for college. And it's now in an updated format. cfnc.org, Adam's new homepage.
Early Carolina applications due tomorrow. Entering class of 2021. Get fired up. Sorry about your high school senior year basically being a complete disaster.
And junior year.
And the end of your junior year also.
Other than that, everything's going great.
College will probably be fun. By the time you get there, perhaps it'll be like real college.
Maybe by your junior year, things will be good to go.
Yeah.
Adam Mack Brown met with the media on Monday. I had a chance to talk to Coach Brown as well for the radio show, which don't forget is in your podcast feed. Mack Brown Show. And Coach Brown, couple things coming off the game from Saturday. He reiterated the fact of Carolina won the game, and that's what he's most concerned about. That, yes, there were plenty of things defensively in the second half that the Tar Heels didn't like. He didn't think they tackled well enough, still frustrated with penalties. But simple fact is Carolina's 3-0. He also talked a lot about the ranking because Carolina's number 5 in the country right now in the AP poll. And number 6 in the coaches' poll. And Carolina has not been ranked that high, Adam, since Judgment Day, the end of Mack Brown's, or near the end of Mack Brown's first tenure as head coach. And I thought it was pretty interesting because someone asked him about that and said, you know, what can you compare, you know, kind of the journey that got you there the first time versus the journey that's gotten you there this time? And he said, well, to quite honestly, that 97 team, he said it was better. It was just deeper than this team because, Carol, that had been such a buildup to that. I mean, that was the whole Mac Brown 1.0 journey had led to that moment. And from 1-10 the first 2 years to getting better and going to a bowl game, you know, starting to beat the teams that always had beaten Carolina. I mean, turning the corner, getting into the national conversation a full season before in 96 where Carolina was a legitimate top 10 team in the country led to that moment. Whereas this time around, it's like everything's been hidden fast forward. And Coach Brown said, yeah, he feels like things are ahead of schedule, but that his team at the moment is not in the same place that 97 team was, simply because he doesn't feel like they have enough depth, particularly on the defensive side. And we, of course, know how good that 97 team was on defense. And so he talked a lot about the ranking, about it. It's fun. It creates buzz and excitement, and it's great for recruiting and all those things, but that it's not something that he's particularly concerned about at the moment, that you'd love when the college football playoff rankings come out, whenever that is this year. That's when you're much more interested about where you are and hopefully up high.
It definitely seemed, as you said, Carolina had earned it in 97, and that was a 10-year process that led up to that week. And even after Carolina lost that game to Florida State, there still wasn't much doubt that the Tar Heels were one of the better teams in the country. I think there's a little skepticism about the Tar Heels this year, as there probably should be.
Well, and something he said, which I think is right, is, I mean, I think everybody can agree that Clemson and Alabama, and maybe you put Georgia in there, you know, those teams are really, really good. And then he said, then there's a whole lot of other teams that have to go week to week. And Mac Brown wasn't trying to play three-card Monty with anybody here, Adam. He said he thinks that
he wasn't Scott Williams out on the street in New York City.
That's a good callback there, Adam. That's right. He said he thinks he has a good team, but that they are still in a place where they've got to go out and prove it every single week, and they have to play well every single week. And if they don't, they're going to have a hard time winning if they don't play. They can't show up and play 40% and have a chance to win. Clemson can probably play 40% against some teams and still win. Carolina's not in that place yet. And so his whole point was, Carolina's good. And we saw how good Carolina can be on offense in particular this past weekend, but that the Tar Heels are still in a place where it has to be displayed every single week, and they have to play well every week to continue this thing moving.
I do think, and I know this may sound a little silly, I think we can all realize the polls this year are a little weird because of all the various scheduling things. But I do think there's some value to just getting people accustomed to seeing you there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where Carolina's trying to go. They're trying to be Clemson and Alabama and Georgia. But you don't get there when you're not the team that people think about. And I think the more people can, when they're filling out their ballot or when they're looking on Twitter or whatever, and they see the Tar Heels up there, the more you're up there, the more you get up there. And that's not necessarily fair, but that is how it works. And so you're not going to hand it back and go, well, gee, guys, we're not the fifth best team. Why don't you put us down there at number 20? That's where we're more accustomed to being. You're up there. You get a chance to play again this week. If you win, might move up. A couple of those teams play each other. Play again the next week. As long as you can stay up there, it's nothing but beneficial, and you have the right to earn it by winning the games.
And Adam, it's as though you and Mac Brown are on the same wavelength.
As usual.
He talked about that. He said, if you look at the top five right now, you see Clemson and Alabama and Georgia and Notre Dame, and then the Tar Heels. And he said, I'm guessing some people are kind of like, whoa, what are they doing there? And he said, now the next step is what you said, that people don't go, what are they doing there? They go, yeah, that's right, Tar Heels. That makes sense. And so the only way to do that is to continue to build, continue to recruit, all of those different things. But the only thing Carolina can do about it right now is continue to play well and beat Florida State this weekend. And to do that, they're going to have to play well, because I know Florida State's 1-3. You know, and I know, Florida State's got dudes out there at every position who everybody in the country wanted and are great football players. They've played a hard schedule. They've been searching a little bit at quarterback to try to figure out what they want to do. But to expect that Carolina is going to roll down to Tallahassee and it's not going to be any problem is crazy talk.
Well, I think the encouraging thing is you're sitting there at number five, and in no way do you feel like, boy, the Tar Heels have really had to play over their head to get to this 3-0 mark.
No, that's true.
There's room to get better. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get to number one, but there is room for Carolina to play better than they have played so far. They have not come close to playing their best game. They may have played their best offensive game, but they had a couple drops. They definitely have not played their best defensive game, and they, to be sure, haven't played their best game altogether. So there's still room for this fall to progress and the team to progress, and that's what you have to hope happens. And there's absolutely no doubt that if you look at Florida State's recruiting classes the last 3 to 5 years, the players who make up the team that Carolina will play Saturday, you're going to see a bunch of guys who everybody thought were among the best players in the country. So don't think that because they're 1-3 and they had a close game with Jacksonville State or whoever, that the Tar Heels will just roll in there and blow them out. Now Carolina is what Florida State used to be. Florida State would like to beat a top five team. Whether Carolina owns it or not, you're still putting that in the media guide if you beat them. Knowles beat number five. That's a big deal. So you have to play to that level every single week, because even the teams that might be down a little would love to have that notch on their belt.
Game time change, by the way, for that Florida State game. Adam, 7:30 now. Got moved to ABC. That's 3 straight weeks now on ABC. And, of course, on the Tar Heel Sports Network. We'll be on at 6:30.
Probably want to turn down the sound on that one.
Yeah, of course. So I, Adam, as you would expect, I was on the hashtag grind. I mean, Sunday night, whatever. I'm out there working, Adam.
No off days.
Yeah. And so a replay of Carolina Virginia Tech was on the ACC network, I believe. And so while I was doing some stuff, I had that on while I was doing some stuff. And in watching it, and I didn't watch the whole thing or watch every single play, you know, intently, but a couple things stood out to me in seeing it again. One is something we talked about in the Rapid Reactions pod, and that's how well Carolina blocked on the perimeter with its wide receivers. You really saw that. I mean, they did an excellent job. Wide receivers, tight ends, it was terrific. And to that point, it was amazing to me how much room Carolina had to run the football in watching it again. What an unbelievable job scheme-wise and blocking-wise to give Michael Carter and Javonte Williams an enormous amount of space to go do what they do, and that's just run by and through people for huge chunks of yards. And again, we knew what had happened. We saw it happen. But then just to see it again, it was impressive.
I thought it was cool that Carolina gave the player of the week on the offensive side to the entire offensive line. I think you could have even extended that to everyone who blocked, because I think everybody did play a big role in that. But you're right. When you watch it, you see, obviously, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter are good, but they had some nice holes to run through.
Adam, before we move on, let's get to our Champions of the Gridiron, where we highlight MVPs from the previous week, brought to you by UNC Health, dedicated for caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam mentioned it. The Tar Heels gave their offensive player of the week to the offensive line. I do think having Joshua Ezeudu back was big for Carolina. We've mentioned that a couple of times, but just his ability individually as a player and his flexibility on the line. And we saw that on Saturday. He played some guard. He bumped out and played some tackle at times and was really, really good. So I think that helped the offensive line. Carolina, even near the end of the game, had six offensive linemen in because they brought in Keyron Johnson as well. So, I mean, they would have just a massive amount of bodies up there because they were trying to run the football and run out the clock. And so all those guys well-deserved as far as that offensive player of the game. Kyler McMichael, defensive player of the game for Carolina, and he did do a nice job out there. Tar Heels, Adam, are more comfortable playing tight man with their corners right now. Now, you know, losing Duck for at least a couple of weeks here, it appears. He's already been announced that he would not play in the game against Florida State this week. So that may change things a little, but you would hope also Patrice Rene now getting a game under his belt, trying to come back from the injury, that Carolina can continue to be pretty aggressive there. I know also the Tar Heels really like Tony Grimes and want to continue to get him on the field. But Kyler McMichael, defensive player of the game, special teams player of the game, nobody, our boy Jonathan Kim. We need to get Jonathan Kim on here soon.
I definitely feel an impending push for Jonathan Kim to appear in some fashion on some version of the pod.
I would like that. And we talked about the good tackle that he made on the kickoff. We had a question on the radio show about if the kickers practice tackling. And Mac Brown said they do, you know, go through some drills every now and then, not live because they don't want to get them hurt. He said, but they do at least practice it with those guys because he said, you know, inevitably, I mean, you see it every year. It'll be twice a year or something that the kicker has to go make a big play in special teams. And it was a great tackle on one of the best return guys in the country in Herbert. So Jonathan Kim, I'm all on the Jonathan Kim train, man. He's been awesome so far.
Solid form tackle, not just a
no, like it was
stuck,
a good
stuck
yeah.
his leg in there and tripped him.
Yeah, no,
took him down.
It was there was a little bit of a pop.
Yeah,
Coach Brown said that in the in the highlights or whatever, that was the one that the whole room, when the team was watching highlights back, that was the one that everybody got the most fired up about.
Well, and you know why he'll be good on the pod, because you know kickers love talking about big tackles.
Oh yeah.
So all we'll have to do is say, Jonathan,
yeah,
talk about your hit.
Yeah, that's 5 minutes right there.
And then you can go fill up the water bottle at the water bottle fountain and come back 10 minutes later.
Quick check, 211 bottles have been saved by my personal water fountain.
Mm.
You're welcome, cranes and herons, swampland. That is my gift to you. Adam, anything else on the football side of things? Of course, if you want more in-depth breakdown of the matchup with Virginia Tech, we had the Rapid Reactions pod where we went much more in-depth in the game itself. You can go back in your feed and check that out. It came out Saturday evening.
That's all.
Okay. Adam, Leon Johnson is our guest, and our interview brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for around 5 seconds. That is Adam's approximation. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Don't do that. Trust a choice. Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down that phone. Hands up. Hands free, NC. Learn more. TrustedChoice.com. Find an agent near you. So, we talked to Leon Johnson. We're going to do that. Come back. Adam has a list. And how can you justify that? We have a story time and more. All coming up on the Carolina Insider.
Jones, many people play fantasy football.
I do not, but right. I understand many people do.
I don't either, but I know a lot of people do. And if our guest today was eligible to be drafted in fantasy football right now, I would take him with my number one pick, because Leon Johnson could do everything. He could run the ball. He could catch the ball out of the backfield. And if I remember correctly, he may have thrown a touchdown pass or two. So we are excited to have, and I can tell by that chuckle, he definitely threw a touchdown pass or two. So we are excited to have my number one imaginary fantasy football draft pick, Leon Johnson, on the show today. Leon, thanks for giving us some time.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
tell us what you're doing right now before we delve back into your Tar Heel and football career.
Me and my family, we landed in Oklahoma. Currently, I'm coaching high school football here at the high school just around the corner. My wife, she's in real estate, and my son is 10 minutes away at the University of Oklahoma going to school. So that's the life that I live right now.
Leon, how'd you end up in Oklahoma?
I had a friend that I played with in at the New York Jets, and for years I've been coming to Oklahoma just to hang out with them. And I was with the Rams for a second, and me and my wife came to visit on 4th of July, and I asked her, we don't know anybody in St. Louis, so we just sold the house in St. Louis and bought a house up here in Oklahoma to be closer to our friends. My wife's from Austin, Texas, so that's roughly about six hours away. And I can still come home to see my parents. So, that's just the way it happened. That's how it rolled out for me.
Do the players you coach have any idea that you actually know what you're talking about?
You know, currently, the players here, they get a sense that I do. But around here, you know, I'm an OU territory. So, my name is bigger in North Carolina, but you know, I'm competing with some of the Heisman greats up here in Oklahoma. So I kind of don't get the popularity that I around here, but you know, we have a lot of great players that come from the University of Oklahoma, and our current coach is played at the University of Oklahoma. So a lot of attention goes that way.
Well, I'm just going to tell him something right now. I'm looking in the Tar Heel record book at this moment, Adam. Nobody has scored more touchdowns in the history of Carolina football than Leon Johnson. They need to put some respect on that name out there in Oklahoma.
Well, and
it's funny, but you know, I try to tell the kids, and some of them look up the videos and see some of the things that I did back in the past on YouTube. But it is a totally different era of football.
So some of the things you did in high school. Let's go back to Leon Johnson as the high school star in the western part of North Carolina. How did you first get into football? Because weren't you also a baseball player?
I kind of played them all. Football, basketball, baseball, and track. I kept myself busy in high school. I enjoyed playing sports. So, you know, one season led to the next. Football became, I excelled more at football than the other ones, even though I did good in track and baseball. You know, football was my love, and Coach Brown came and got me in high school, and my career started from there.
Well, and in the western part of the state, people sometimes don't realize North Carolina sometimes isn't as big a draw as like a Tennessee, and I think weren't you also looking at South Carolina? So how did your recruiting process go?
That was a funny day, as you asked. I was in class one day, and I think Coach Brown was in the weight room, and Sparky Woods was in the wrestling room. And my head coach came up, my basketball head coach, Terry Rogers, came up to me and he said, hey, get it over with. You know, he said, go ahead and choose one. And that day, I said, well, I'm going to North Carolina. And of course, it made Coach Brown happy. Didn't make Sparky Woods too happy, you know. But, it was just a sudden thing. I had a lot of people coming in and trying to recruit me and trying to get me to go to their schools. And just that day, I think there was some other smaller schools there too, but just to get the headache of, you know, the phone calls, the, the recruiting process, you know, he was like, get it over with. And that's when I made my decision.
Leon, we talked to Natron Means a couple of months ago, and I know he was a little bit before you at Carolina, but he talked about how it started to become really important for the best guys in North Carolina to go to North Carolina, and he felt like kind of his class started that momentum, and it kept rolling through Coach Brown's first tenure. Was that a big deal to you to go to the University of North Carolina, being from Morganton?
Well, yeah, I grew up a Clemson fan, you know, and not so much, you know, that I wanted to go to Clemson. I didn't know about the recruiting process, so I just wanted to get recruited by Clemson. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, just something that you've seen on TV. I think Clemson was pretty good. And over the years, you know, I kind of leaned towards North Carolina just because I'm in state. You know, you kind of want to go to the university that, you know, the states you live in. And North Carolina was growing. I had an opportunity to go out there and play quarterback, and then eventually move to running back. But I think it's important that for a lot of the kids or in the state of North Carolina, to if you win those games against Duke and NC State, you'll get those players, and that definitely will help your team out.
Leon, we've been talking you up here for a couple weeks in the hopes that we would get you on the podcast. And in the course of that conversation, we got an email from a listener whose name is Mike Thomas. I don't think this is quarterback Mike Thomas. This is Mike Thomas, who I think attended Hickory High. And he said to ask you about the Freedom versus Hickory High game, your senior year in high school. It was an epic performance by Leon, and Mike was on the losing end.
That game will always be with me. For one reason, my cousin Petey King was the quarterback for Hickory. So I had family cheering for me and family cheering for him. And we were both head to head, you know, going to battle. And, you know, just, you know, stat wise, I maybe had, you know, 100 some yards rushing. You know, I had a 90 yard punt return, you know, a bunch of tackles. And I did it all. Well, I blocked the kick at the end of the game, but I did it all with a punctured lung because I got hit. And, I had my lung. I couldn't play the whole game, but yeah, I did it on like a punctured lung, and that put me out for probably about a month before I can come back and play. But a lot of people, when I go back home, that's the one of the games that they remember, and they resonate me with that game. And it was a fun time. You know, I'm glad I come out with the win, but I did a lot that game, and you know, it was fun times for me and my family.
Did you drive the bus back to Morganton after the game and then cook burgers for the entire team and have them all over?
You know, unfortunately, that game was at home. So my family had to say hi, and they had to go back to Hickory. It was a classic battle. You know, I ran into Petey several times, and I have that tape of the game, and you know, and I'm like, hey, all right, you know, we put this tape in, show our kids, you know, who won the game. So you know, it's good to, you know, remember those times.
That's right. Be a happy 4th of July, Petey. Let's put in the tape so the whole family can see.
Petey was so happy when VCRs went away, and Leon was like, that's all right, I got it burned to DVD. You want to stream this on Netflix? We got it.
Yeah, we converted to DVD. You know? So, you know, a lot of the things too, you know, it's sad for the kids, is my first year in pros, that's when everything transitioned to the DVD. So if you don't have a VCR at home, you know, pretty much you can't go see some of my tapes, you know. So it's ancient. And I don't know if the kids know what a VCR is, but I hit them with it sometimes, saying, you bring a VCR up here and I bring some tapes and I'll let you know, see how I did in high school. So it's pretty funny.
So, Leon, what was your reaction when the first time that this triple option deal was brought up when you were in Chapel Hill and that was going to be the way the Tar Heels were going to try and attack things for a little while?
Well, it's funny that I live in Oklahoma. One of my favorite players growing up was Jamil Holloway, and he ran the option up here in Oklahoma for years. And I ran the option for my first 2 years in high school, and I just fell in love with it. You know, I love watching him run the option, and I try to do what he did, you know, out here on the football field. And so it became like a second nature thing to me because I ran it so much in high school. Jason Stanisek ran it, you know, to a T. You know, had Chris Watson leading the way. So, you know, to be able to bring the option into the game, it helps you out. You know, it helps the team out with, you know, ways you can run plays to beat teams.
What made you and Jason Stanisek have such great chemistry when you were running that offense? Because when I think about the perfect option, I think about you two guys getting out there on the edge and defenses not being able to figure out what was happening next.
Well, Jason was a magic man. You know what I mean? He can make things happen. And for us, we just had fun. You know, the times I remember we'd be in the huddle and we'd be laughing at each other. You know, he'd say, like, catch the ball or do something. You know, we always had fun as a team. And you know, that's how we grew. But, you know, Jason could work his magic with the option. And, you know, the key thing was to stay in pitch relationship with him, because if he gets free, he's going to pitch you that ball. And we all love to get the extra yards when quarterback pitches you the ball. So I kind of just stayed on his hip, and hopefully he got the play done. But yeah, that was good for us.
Leon, one of my favorite all-time Tar Heel games from Tar Heel fandom, and anybody who is of our age, which let's just say is experienced and wise, will know the game I talk about, and that's the USC game out in California to kick off that season in the 93 season, I think, that kicked off that year. What do you remember from that matchup with the Trojans and just a dominating performance?
Yeah, it was a way for us to, you know, get on the platform of being one of the great teams, you know, being invited out there and having that opportunity to play. We definitely took advantage of it, and it kind of put North Carolina on the map, you know, as far as being able to go out and beat some of the bigger teams, you know, out in the country. So that game, it was fun. You know, we had fun, you know, going to Disneyland and doing all the rides and everything. But when it came down to business, I think that was a moment that it was turning the page for the Carolina football to get better. And I think as a team, we accomplished goals to get other kids to come to the school. And I think being on the national TV, playing that game, a lot of people, we got a lot of recognition, and we were able to, you know, just expand out and grab great players to come and help build the Carolina tradition.
How did you develop your ability to catch the ball out of the backfield?
Well, I think that's just a natural thing. Being a quarterback, I was a quarterback my whole life, so I always had a ball in my hand, you know. It's just natural, because you always have the ball in your hand, you're always throwing it, you're always catching it, and it just becomes second nature, you know. Just being a kid growing up playing different sports, you know, basketball, baseball, you know, catching is very important. And I don't know, maybe my hand-eye coordination developed faster than most other people, but having the ball in my hands a lot of times, it really, you know, it got me to the point to where, like I said, it just becomes second nature to me, and I can do different things with the ball. And I do it with my kids out here. I'll catch balls funny ways, and they just look at me and they wonder how I do it. But it's just a way that you see it, the way you place your hands, and I guess I become good at it.
I always think of Johnson and Johnson, you and Curtis Johnson back there together in the backfield in the 90s for the Tar Heels. Did you and Curtis keep in touch post Tar Heel life or no?
Not really. We kind of went by our classes, you know. Like my class was 92. We call it the Deuce class. I mean, everybody back in that era, we all had our own little themes, and we have a group. It's a group me. I think it's a, you know, we have a group that we're all on, and we all keep in contact with pretty much everybody that we came, you know, to Carolina with, you know. So that's one way that we keep in touch with each other, is through, I think, was it group me?
Yeah.
I'm not real sure, but
Some of those guys?
We all talk that way.
Who are some of those guys in that chat? And what are you? What is that chat like on a Tar Heel game day, or when it really gets heated up?
Well, it's you know, we'll have Brian Honeycutt, Chris Watson, Marcus Wall, Darren Ashford. Just about everybody, I would say a majority of our class is on there, And it's fun because sometimes when I'm missing a game, or I think last week or a couple weeks, the Virginia-North Carolina game came on and somebody chimed in and said, hey, we're on TV. Go watch it. You know, one of the throwback games. So, you know, I was cutting grass. So I ran in the house, push record, you know, so I can go back, you know, and watch it a little later. We all just keep in contact with each other through, you know, friendships. I think just a little while ago, Brian Honeycutt, I think he killed a deer or something like that. And people were asking, what are you going to do with the meat? You know, and he was just telling everybody how he's going to process it and everything. So, you know, it's just, it's fun to be able to, you know, reflect back to your friends that, you know, that you went to battle with in college, and, you know, and have lifelong friends that you can just still talk to anytime you need them. So, you know, Marcus Wall, every morning he sends out a prayer for all of us to read, and, you know, and we all sometimes respond to it. So we all try to stay, you know, as close as possible, because, you know, friendship lasts forever.
All right. When the class of Deuce Deuce gets together, what are one or two stories that you absolutely know are going to get told about y'all's time in Chapel Hill?
Well, yes, it's, if we ever get back together, I don't know. They're probably telling me about times that I did something or I didn't do something, you know. I vaguely remember some of the times that they said, oh, I remember, Leon, you didn't want to do this. And I was like, no, I don't remember none of that. You know what I mean? I just remember the good times. So, but they're always hitting me with stuff that I did in college. And you know, and I'm like, I don't remember that part. I claimed the CTE to that one. So, you know, we all, you know, just talk about the old times, the fun times that we had, you know, just growing up in the dorms and, you know, and developing the grown men. But other than that, you know, I'd want to get back and get down there to see a game and you know, just be involved. It's hard coaching high school football because our schedules are on the same, you know, and if I could jump on a plane at 11 o'clock and be there for 11 o'clock game Saturday morning, I'd love to do it. But unfortunately, my schedule doesn't run that way. I tried to get there this year, but the COVID came in. I had a break last week, and if the season was right, I think it was a bye week for me. I was able to go back. I was going to come back home and, you know, just go to a game and see the coaches. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I need to come out and, you know, and just see all the players and you know, and just, like you said, reminisce about the old times.
Guys, I don't remember that time you're talking about. I think I was in study hall.
But that might have been one of the ones that said, remember, Leon, you didn't go to study hall. I'm like, nah, I don't remember that. You know, so.
I remember that 4.0 GPA. That's what I remember.
Yeah, that might be a conversation too that pops up. So I try to stay away from those. Just like I said, remember the good times.
So after your Chapel Hill days, of course, you had a long career, 7 years in the NFL. What was that experience like for you? And I have to imagine during that time period, I mean, that's living out a dream. What was that like?
Well, it's, you know, when you get the opportunity to play in the NFL, you know, it's a blessing. You know, I mean, you made it to the highest level and you want to excel in, you know, in the NFL, you know, so that you can be productive for your family and productive for yourself. You know, my years, I enjoyed them. You know, I hate the injuries that I had throughout my career, you know, that kind of, I would say, slowed it down a little bit. But, you know, that's part of the game, you know. But I was able to stick it out, you know, and play my 8 years and be able to relax and, you know, just enjoy the time that I had playing football. And just to make it to that level is an accomplishment. And that's what we all want all the players to do, to be able to play in the NFL just so they can have that experience, you know, something that they can write in their book later on. And I was grateful to have that opportunity to do it.
And now, Leon, you played for Bill Parcells with the Jets. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What is that?
Now,
what is
Coach
he
Parcells,
like?
Well, me starting with Coach Parcells, you know, set the foundation for me going anywhere else. You know, after you go through a training camp with Coach Parcells or anything, you know, every team I went to, everything was easy. You know what I mean? So, you know, he pushed me, you know, he developed me into the person I am, but he also gave me, you know, life lessons, you know, to always, to always remember, you know, one thing he always used to tell me is to remember the word no. You know what I mean? That we would come to practice and he would say, hey, you say it yet? You know what I mean? I was like, not yet. You know what I mean? He'd say, hey, you got to remember to say no. You know what I mean? You know, so he was on me about that. But, you know, some of the sayings that Parcells would have, I use out here with the kids, like he would say, son, you're like a ball in the tall grass. You lost. You know what I mean? He was, you know. He would look at a kid and he said, are you stupid or you just don't know what you're doing? You know what I mean? And I don't know how you answered that question, you know? And one of my favorites is, he said, don't tell me about the pain, just show me the baby. You know what I mean? So he had some classic lines that I remember that, you know, I try to use on the kids and you know, saying he was one of the great legendary coaches, and I was just grateful to be under him for my first few years to make me the person that I am, to help develop me to the person that I am.
On the surface, Bill Parcells and Mack Brown appear to be pretty different, but they both have been extremely successful coaching football. What, if anything, do they do similarly that has enabled both of them to have such good success?
Well, I think in with Coach Parcells, you know, he wants you to go out there and give you your best. You know, just like Coach Brown, you want him to go out, want you to go out there and give it your all every time. You know, there's sometimes players slack off, and Coach Parcells is, you know, case, if you slack off, he might have a running back over there trying out for your position, you know, to get you motivated, you know, just to try to scare you, and that made you go out there and want to produce and be you know, effective in what you do on the field. And Coach Brown, he gets the right players together. You know, he knows how to bring in players that will help, you know, fill in the pieces to the puzzle so that you can go out there to win. You know, if we need to go out there and get a quarterback and he's on the edge, Coach Brown, he can seal the deal. And I think when he was recruiting me back in high school, I think he said he flew around because he couldn't land with the fog. But I guess once he got to my home visit, you know what I mean? You know, it's almost like he sealed the deal just talking to my parents and just being there and showing his commitment to getting great players to come to university. And, you know, and that's one thing he still continues to do. And that's why the Carolina's doing so well right now.
Leon, how good was that 96 Carolina team in retrospect, in hindsight? You guys were so close to what was called the Alliance Bowl, I think, back then, or the Alliance Bowls back then. How good was that group?
We were a special group. You know, if you look at that team, there were a lot of guys that are first-rounders, you know, in the NFL, you know, defense-wise. Offensive-wise, we were skilled, but I mean, to have that talented group out there, you know, that we fell short. We're pretty special, you know what I mean? So, and that's, you know, we all bonded together, you know, just like I said, we all had our own groups, you know, like I was Deuce Deuce, you had 9 A's, you had 9 Trades, and we had our own little call outs that we used to do. And that brought us together as a team and it showed on the field. So, we were pretty nice. Unfortunately, we didn't get the chance to make it to a major bowl, but, you know, we had that opportunity, you know, to slip right through our hands.
As we had talked about, you had a lot of success running the option. When Greg Davis and Mack Brown came to you before the 96 season and said, Leon, you're doing great. You're scoring a ton of touchdowns. Now we're going to change the entire offense and it's going to be completely different. What did you think about that? And how did you adapt to the new offense in 96?
Well, it was, I enjoyed it because I caught a lot of the balls out of the backfield. And me one-on-one against the linebacker was fun to do. You know what I mean? I'm going to beat that linebacker, and I knew I was going to get the ball, you know. So we had a lot of plays designed for the running backs coming out of the backfield. And like I said, being able to catch the ball really helped, helped my game. So, it wasn't too bad, you know. But, you know, they found ways to get me the ball, you know, as in just throwing it to me.
Were you surprised when you learned that Mac Brown was coming back to Carolina a couple seasons ago?
You know, throughout the years, I've met some of the different coaches that we've had, you know, since Coach Brown left. And if we were going to get back on that stage of, you know, being one of the best universities in the land, I think they had to go back, you know, to their roots. You know what I mean? So when Coach Brown decided to come back, I think that lit a fire for the university, but also lit a fire for all the players that played for him, because we knew that once he gets everything going, you know, what he did with us, he's going to do with this new class, and we're going to be successful. So, you know, I think it was a great move, you know, for the university and for itself. And it's paying off, because, you know, we go out here and win some games, you know, we might be in that major bowl, and we all win that national championship. And that just helps set the stage for us.
Leon, what does he do so well to connect to not just parents of prospects, but also to connect to an 18-year-old football player? How is it that he is able to connect to all of those different parties, in your opinion?
I think he really is personal with the kids. You know, he really wants to prove to the parents and to the players that even though he's going to be the head coach and he's taking your kid in and to the university, he's going to take care of you. While you're at school, and even after you're at school, you know, I enjoy getting tweets. I'm not tweets. What do you call it? I'm not a computer person, but I enjoy getting text messages from, Sally, Coach Brown, saying, you know, I'm driving through North Carolina. Thought of you. If it's your birthday, he remembers your birthday to reach out to you. You know, it goes beyond just, you know, coaching a guy for 4 years and watching him develop into the NFL or to the real world. You know, this is 20 some odd years later, and we still got a bond that was there when I was at the university. So his connection with the players and his lifelong connection with the players is a way that when older players talk to the younger group, he's always going to be there for you. You know, he gives you a chance to come back, you know, and you're always welcomed. And that's one thing that you need, you know, as a person. You want, if you're down and something's going wrong, you know, you always depend on your Carolina family. And he always keeps me in the loop, even though I'm far away. He always keeps me in the loop with, you know, some of the surroundings with his tweets and everything. But he just connects you with the players, and it makes a real difference when you're trying to go out there and recruit kids.
All right, Leon, I got two questions for you. One not as serious, and the one is important life advice that we need from you. The not as serious one, I'm assuming a decade in the NFL, you see a lot of stuff and you meet a lot of characters. Was there a moment during your NFL career when you were like, whoa, I'm a long way from Morganton right now?
Of course, you know it was real when you get your first paycheck. Yeah, it becomes real. You know what I mean? You're like, hey. I'm not in Morganton no more, you know. So those definitely count, you know, as far as knowing that you're in a different place, you know. So, but other than that, you know, just the seeing the different, how would you say it, the different types of people that you meet in the NFL, you know what I mean, with speed, strength, you know what I mean. And I think for me, And I look back now, and I'm wondering, how did I do it? You know, because, you know, I'm here, my body's getting older, and I was like, I was able to do that years ago, you know, but now, you know, like I said, I'm more of a just a coach. I'm just a coach, you know. I'm done playing, but that was kind of the moment of, you know, just knowing that you're up there with elite athletes, and you made it. And you're considered one of those elite athletes, you know, is pretty outstanding.
In addition to a coach, you mentioned you're also a parent. So I want to know what advice Dad Leon Johnson gave to his son before your son went to college. What did you tell him?
Well, I told him when he goes to college, he's on his own. You know, if he ever needs me, I'm here for you. You know, I don't want to be in his life. I think his mom does enough of that. You know, So he keeps good coast track on him. He's only probably about 10, 15 minutes away from me, so he's easy to get home. But one thing that I always told my kid growing up is to never settle. You know what I mean? Never settle on, you know, just being mediocre or anything. If you're going to do something, you know, be your best at it, you know. And I've gave him that speech, you know, several times. And, you know, growing up and watching our family, you know, he's developed into a great young man. You know what I mean? I mean, he does not play sports, but he's very talented, you know, and he's getting the jump done in the classroom. And I couldn't be any more prouder than him than I am, you know, just watching him become the man he is today.
We appreciate Leon Johnson's time. By the way, Adam, did you see this? ACC Players of the Week out. Michael Carter, not a surprise there. Michael Carter with the 214 yards, as we know, a former pod guest. And then, Adam, former video pod guest, Brian Anderson, took home the ACC Offensive Lineman of the Week.
Power of the pod.
Yeah. I felt like a proud papa when I saw that list come out. I said, oh, look, there's old Michael and Brian. You rascals, congrats.
Well, Jonathan Kim, if you'd come be on the pod, maybe you've got a shot at Special Teams Player of the Week.
Man, we're locking in on you, Kim.
You're the reigning Tar Heel Special Teams Player of the Week, but we're going big. We're going for conference honors.
So, Adam, first of all, what a fun conversation with Leon Johnson, who, by the way, Adam, you tell people what Leon Johnson texted you right after the interview was over.
Well,
first of all, no big deal. Adam's text bros with Leon Johnson.
Yeah, obviously we're text bros with Leon Johnson, which 1995 Adam A would have been confused about what text bros was.
What?
But secondly, would have been amazed. So we wrap up our interview with Leon Johnson. We, of course, talk about each other's families and other personal things for 20 minutes after the interview's done. And then we hang up, although we were doing it electronically because that's how awesome we are. And next thing you know, I get a text in the next 1 minute. I said, Jones, hold on right there. Let's see what this text says. Oh, my stars. It's from Leon Johnson.
Oh, my word.
And so Leon texted us, forgot to mention my little cousin Chaz Surratt. If y'all could throw in a line and say I'm proud of him and to keep doing what he's doing, that would be awesome. Thank you very much.
So when you said this, you and I both went, wait a second. Did we know that Leon Johnson is cousins with Chaz Surratt? And what I started remembering was when you said, I was like, I somehow think that nugget has been in my mind at some point in time. So we did the research, when most good journalists do, after the fact. And yes,
genealogy.com.
Chaz Surratt's dad is cousins with Leon Johnson.
That explains a lot about the multifaceted talents of both those gentlemen.
So that's on us for not asking the question. And no surprise, it's on the classiness of Leon Johnson for making sure that we say something about it.
Well, and we know Chaz listens because he's been on the pod.
What's up? I'm Chaz Surratt. See you later, Big Grits.
Sure.
So, Chaz, if you're wondering if your cousin Leon Johnson is proud of you, the answer is yes, and keep doing what you're doing, which is tracking down ball carriers.
Okay, so to that point, the fact that Leon Johnson was on the show, not the whole Chaz Surratt thing. We received a story time, Adam, from Mark Franklin that has to do with Leon Johnson. So maybe we need to start teasing who the guests are earlier because we get great things like Mark sending us in a Leon Johnson story to use on the show when Leon Johnson joins us.
Very timely.
So, Adam, open up the box. Let Mr. Goose Honkers out because Mark's story starts like this. It was 1993. Adam was wearing big, bright-colored sweaters and starter hats that were too tall on his head.
And pleated pants.
I added that part in. However, 100% accurate.
Yeah, that doesn't make it any less true.
Mark was living in Carmichael Dorm across the street from Keenan. And Mark had a suite mate named Leon, who happened to be half of the backfield tandem of Johnson & Johnson.
So did this used to commonly happen? Like, you just showed up at school and who's that in my suite? Oh, it's Leon Johnson?
Yeah. Half of the backfield tandem, Johnson & Johnson.
I feel like roommate selection is a little more scientific now.
Mark says he can vividly remember watching Leon play EA Sports college football, and he would pick Carolina and feed the ball to number 12. It was surreal seeing Leon control Leon. That would be... Yes, I would do that. Especially if you're a tailback or something like that. You just give yourself the ball every time.
Yes.
Which, of course, you can do now by all the fancy making of players and everything, Adam. Kids today. The year before, pre-Leon, as Mark says, when Carolina beat Georgia Tech in the goalpost game,
incited by Mac Brown, as we know,
Mark was among the many celebrating on the field. During the mayhem, he grabbed a patch of blue-painted grass and the orange first down marker, not the chains, as souvenirs. So we're not talking about the pylon. We're talking about the big marker that they move, right? That's connected to the chains.
I think he's talking about, you know, they lay that thing down on the ground.
Oh, the thing on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now I'm caught up.
Which, for some reason, I'm more okay with Mark stealing that piece of property than I am the big stick. Like,
well, how would he wouldn't have been able to get the big stick out of Keenan Stadium.
Don't think Mark didn't think about it.
Mark says, hopefully the statute of limitations is up. I'm sorry, Mark. We're going to have to send someone to your home.
Mark, open your door right now.
Back to 1993. Realizing my suite mate was a star in the making, Mark asked Leon to autograph the first down marker. When I showed it to him, he said, "What is that?" And I told him it's the thing that he keeps running past on the way to first downs. He signed it, and that first down marker is one of my favorite pieces of memorabilia, reminding me of one of the greatest games and one of the greatest running backs in Carolina history. By the way, I couldn't have had such a great memento if there were first down lasers.
Well, see, that's where you're wrong, Mark. What you would have taken in that scenario would have been the little box that shoots the laser out of it.
Well, that's a much more expensive take.
Well, times have changed, inflation, all those things. And Mark would take the box and Leon would sign it. And I'm thinking maybe silver Sharpie, because I think this item is kind of space gray, Jones. The first down laser box. And you'd have Leon's autograph right on there in silver.
I got Leon Johnson like, "What is this? What are you having me sign?
I've never seen this before, this bright orange thing.
Why do you have this?
Do you do construction?"
So, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Leon. For my life. Oh, no way. That was Big Grits. Adam, to your list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Let's see what's here on the old list. Okay, first of all, I know you all have your DVRs set, but just in case you've forgotten, Supermarket Sweep debuts this Sunday. That's October 18th. Set your DVRs.
Now remember, the next time you're at a checkout counter and you hear that beep, think of the fun you could have on Supermarket Sweep.
Secondly, watched a little more Hoops.
No.
Got this.
You did. You watched Hoops without me one day.
You were invited and you didn't show up. I saved you a seat and you never arrived.
That's true.
And I got to see some folks I hadn't seen before. And I would like to say that Dayron Sharpe is a very physical post player who's going to get a lot of rebounds. I like how he gets rebound. Like, he doesn't just get the rebounds that you get because you're tall. Like, I'm familiar with those rebounds.
Sure, yeah.
He gets tough rebounds in traffic, even when, say, for example, Walker Kessler's around, and Walker Kessler is very tall. Dayron Sharpe going to get a lot of rebounds. Roy Williams likes guys who gets rebounds. Roy Williams also likes guys who forcefully block your shot into about the sixth row and then don't really do anything. Like, don't flex.
Yeah.
Daron Sharpe does that too.
It's just part of his regular day.
So, but I think you could expect that he would get some rebounds. You know who I think it sneakily has a chance to contribute some in ways you might not expect? Puff Johnson, who...
Oh, we Puff. Well, already, you've not been on the pod yet, but we love you.
Yeah. When he is, he'll realize that we're all bros.
Yeah.
I think you think of him as just a shooter, probably. I think he's got a chance to be a little more than that. He doesn't mind getting in the lane. He doesn't mind driving to the basket.
He's taller than I expected, Puff Johnson.
Yeah. So I like him. I like the group of freshmen as a group and their competitiveness.
Yeah. You saw it was freshmen versus vets, right?
It was freshmen plus Armando Bacot versus vets. And the freshmen went on a little tear. And they didn't mind letting you know, which I think is okay, as long as they realize that they're probably going to get some back in the days and weeks and months to come. But I like that edge. I like the competitiveness. I like how much they want to win as a group. And I think that is going to benefit this year's team very positively. And also, just the fact that you've got that competitiveness in practice is so helpful, as opposed to, say, the Tar Heels have six guys and those are the guys who are going to play and they're not worried about losing their spot. I think everyone's worried about losing their spot, except maybe Lil Jerb.
Oh, yeah. To your point, and I don't claim to know the new basketball players very well. At most, I've said hello to them and watched them practice a couple of times, or not even practice, just be on the basketball court a couple of times. They all do seem to me like people and players that Roy Williams is going to really like. Like, I mean, you never want to compare guys to other guys because everybody's an individual, but you just go, that Walker Kessler, yeah, I can see why Roy Williams. Daron Sharpe, yep, I can see it. RJ Davis, yep, can see it. Like, you can tell, in addition to them being good basketball players, you can see the other stuff that Roy Williams likes and his staff likes that would make these guys attractive to Carolina. You can see it.
Practice starts tomorrow.
That's hard to believe.
Traditionally, this would be tomorrow would be the day of the fast break breakfast, which Jones keeps on his calendar and looks forward to for months.
No fast break breakfast, at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah, you'd think you would know. So, no breakfast, but yes, practice. And then, knock on wood, season starts November 25th.
Yeah. Oh, that season's happening. I feel confident about that.
Okay. Good. Michael Gaskins sent us an email. He took the family to Kentucky for fall break and loved representing the Heels, especially in Kentucky. The dirty looks he received were amazing. He kept looking for Luke May since he didn't think a shirt could curl so many lips.
Yeah, he was repping the big old Carolina blue shirt with the white NC on there.
And Michael said that thanks to the Go Heels app, he was able to listen to the football game.
Nice.
Which goes back to how we've talked about how nice it is that it's so much easier to listen to the games now.
Can I ask you a question, Adam?
Yes.
I really like Carolina's navy blue uniforms. I know some people don't like them. I thought they looked good.
Did people not like the Saturday uniforms?
No, I know some people have very strong feelings that the Tar Heels should never do anything but wear Carolina blue and white. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't want to go back to the 2013 and 14 uniforms.
Yeah, boy, those were not good.
But as the third uniform or whatever, I think, and I know we've talked about this before. I'm sure we have. We've done this too long not to, Adam. But the navy looks so good.
Saturday was white helmet, navy jersey, white pants. I thought that looked good.
Yeah, a different look, but I thought it looked good.
I'm anti-black, as we know.
Yeah, I don't care for the... I mean, I don't think the black jersey looks bad, but I like the navy blue better than the black, yes.
But it feels like the navy has gained a more prominent role than the black. There was the time where it felt like the black was coming on, but now it's navy every once in a while, which I think is fine.
Yeah.
Travis Anderson emailed with a question that other Tar Heel football fans wondered about late in the game?
This was very confusing. So Travis's question was about the kerfluffle at the end of the game, that there were two unsportsmanlike penalty conduct or unsportsmanlike conduct penalties against Virginia Tech. And why did Carolina not get the ball? And the reason was, it's a good question. The reason was the penalties were deemed to be dead ball penalties. So after the play was already over, and since it was fourth down when Sam Howell took that final knee, that then he was shoved and the flags came in, that's why Virginia Tech received the football, because the play was already over. It was fourth down, so the change of possession had occurred. And so then so that part was correct. I'm not 100% sure, and again, it didn't matter. Virginia Tech took a knee and the game was over. But I'm not sure the yardage was marked off correctly. So I'd have to go back and look at them, and I could probably do it, and see where Sam Howell took that last knee. And let's see. I think it was at the 12. Is that about right? I'm looking.
That sounds right.
I'm looking to see if it shows it here. It says it was at the 15-yard line that he took the final knee. So if that was the case, let's say it was the 15. So the first unsportsmanlike should move it to the 7.5, and the next unsportsmanlike should move it to about the 3 or 4, right in between there. And Virginia Tech snapped it at the 9. Well, that's not right. So, I mean, again, it didn't matter. But if he took the knee at the 15, each unsportsmanlike should have been half the distance to the goal. So it should have gone 15 to 7.5, 7.5 to 3.5, approximately. So that part I don't think they did correctly, unless I am misunderstanding something. But the fact that Virginia Tech did have the football, that was correct because the flag. Now, if the flag had come in for something that happened during the course of the play, then yes, Carolina would have kept possession. But since it was a dead ball foul, that's why they didn't.
There is one thing that I'm absolutely sure of, and that is that no amount of yardage confusion or who has the ball confusion can change the bush league-ness of that play.
Yeah, it was just unnecessary.
And I don't like to throw around terms like bush league, Jones, because I know that's harsh.
Well, here's the other thing. Stop hitting Sam Howell in the head when he's sliding down.
Yes.
That's happened twice now. And there's been some talk, Sam Howell, he's so physical, likes to run over dudes in high school learning how to slide. He hadn't done anything wrong in those plays. He's been sliding down.
Yeah, he wasn't running over anybody when he was sliding feet first.
No. And I can appreciate that it is not always easy as a defensive player to ease up or whatever. But I thought the one against Syracuse, which I thought should have been a targeting call that they originally did call and then took it off, if I remember correctly, and then this one that they did hold the targeting call, I thought those were both avoidable.
I agree. A lot of people loved hearing from Jackie Manuel on the pod, as you would expect. Charlie Bailey wore his Jackie Manuel Has a Posse shirt in order to listen to Jackie on the pod.
Mm.
Which opens the door for Rusty Sebastian to drop some knowledge on us and let us know that the whole Has a Posse meme originally started with Andre the Giant Has a Posse.
Yeah.
So the first Has a Posse shirt was the wrestler Andre the Giant. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
When I saw this email from Rusty, which helpfully had the visual of the Andre the Giant Has a Posse, I kind of remember that when I saw that. You would think that seeing the Jackie shirt would make me remember it because all they did was change the head.
Right.
The headshot.
Blake Salmony. I think I've messed up Blake's name before, and I probably just did it again.
No, you're right.
Really enjoyed the 300th pod celebration. And
I want to read this email. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
So Blake said he was so ready to be disappointed with the 300th pod after the barn burner performances of the first two centennials. He already had a stern retort planned, something close to, All right, fellas, that's enough. Time to act like you've been there before. But the power of Bill Leslie was undeniable. Also love the callback to the inaugural pod opening, which leads me to a question. Can you tell us about the conversations you had about starting the podcast, and how is it different than you imagined? Is it in any way the same that you imagined it would be? Well, we'll get to those in a second. Adam, so I think we can both agree that if we make it to pod 500, we've got to do something.
Something big is going to happen.
My question is pod 400.
Right.
Do we have a celebration for pod 400? 97 pods from now?
Or do we act like we've been there before?
Right. This is something we got to figure out. 500, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
400, in question.
I think making it to either 400 or 500
we
is in question.
We got to get there first.
Yeah. Look, if we're lucky enough to win, they might ask us to stay around and we can play another pod.
Right.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
You look down the road, that's where you're going.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Okay, to Blake's questions. What kind of conversations did we have leading up to the pod? That was 5 years ago. I probably called Adam, was like, hey, Adam, you want to do a podcast? I don't know if I'm saying that right. Podcast?
Yeah, I don't honestly remember.
Yeah. So I will say how do I think it is different?
There's a lot more of them.
Yeah, we do a lot more. And the breadth of guests that we've been able to get has been different than I thought it would be. And I've said that before. I think we've done that on maybe a pod, Ask Me Anything. But I think when we started, we thought it had to be like the most unbelievable guest every single time. And that's not, I'm going to get to my point here. I think that we've been able to find interesting stories from some people who are really big names and then some people who are not as big a name or didn't necessarily play but have ties to Carolina. I think it's been cool to be able to step away from athletics but find somebody like David Gardner running the Motley Fool, you know, stuff like that. So that has been different than how I thought it would be, but I think it's been different in a very positive way to be able to talk to all these different people that have some kind of tie to Carolina.
I think another thing I didn't expect was just the interactivity that it has turned out to have, where it's not just us talking to you, but some of the best parts are when you talk back to us or tell us a story about Leon Johnson signing a first down marker, or you listen to the pod somewhere cool or send us some Skittles or something. I didn't know all that was going to happen, and that's been really fun.
Adam, funny that you mentioned being in a faraway location.
Yeah, I was teeing that one up.
Yeah. Oh, look at you.
What?
T. Pruitt sent us an email and said that he was enjoying a local adult beverage, socially distanced.
Was he at the fourth or the ninth hole?
Yeah. Tonight here in Germany.
Oh, so no.
While watching the Heels test out the scoreboard functionality in Keenan, T said he screamed biscuits when Carolina got to 56 points and wants to know if we can pull the right strings here and get the promotion to get the 100-point promotion from Bojangles that is done in basketball, maybe get it in the 50-point range in football. Adam, get on it. It's a great idea.
If there was going to be biscuits for football, what's the right number?
I think it's 50. Because 50 is hard to achieve. And I think it's significant when you get – I mean, to me, there's a big difference between 49 and 56, right? I mean, on the score, I mean,
seven.
I'd say about 7 points. No, but I mean, you see 42, 45, 49. When you see a score somebody's got over 50, you go, whoa.
Yeah. Well, and it's big enough, but still achievable, like 100 points.
Right.
Like, if you're really clicking, you can get 100 points. If you're really clicking, you can get 50 points.
Right.
I'm good with that. So it's official. 50 points is pod biscuits.
Yeah. Adam will purchase them for everyone.
Yes.
Daniel Sasson sent us an email, too, Adam, about tire inflator. Did you see this?
I did.
He said, in case we didn't realize it, which I did not, that you can buy your own portable automatic tire inflator? Daniel said he bought one a few years ago to keep in his car after his dad showed it to him, and it's magical. He says he's never going to have to stop at a gas station to inflate his tires again. That's big time. That's big time.
Now we know Jones's Christmas present this year.
No doubt. Let's see. He sent us a link. Let's see. See if it's in my price range. Oh, incredibly affordable, Adam. It's $25.
That's not bad.
That's nothing. That's nice. Thank you, Daniel.
A tweet that I wanted to mention was from Hannah Evans. Hannah brought her 3-year-old daughter to her first game in Keenan Stadium on this past Saturday against Virginia Tech and says this will be one of those stories she hears for the rest of her life. I think that's probably true, but I think that's a cool story that you get to say the first game you went to was 7% attendance and you were one of the 7%.
That's right. One of the 3,535 folks who were there.
But that's also good parenting by Hannah and her husband to make sure that was a priority.
Zachary.
Right. How'd you know that?
Well, Adam, I clicked on Hannah's name, and in her bio it says she is wife of Zachary.
I feel like you might be right.
Well, Adam, see, Leon Johnson texted me and said...
All right, that's it for the list for today.
Adam, you said you have a how can you justify that?
I know. Well, that's a separate thing. I do have a how can you justify that. And it goes a little something like this. I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done? How can you justify
sacrificing our love? How can you possibly justify that?
This also was originally tweeted to the pod. I would not have been aware of this were it not for our good friend Alan Minton.
Thanks, Alan.
You look like you were from Star Trek right then. Jones was wearing his headset over his eyes.
Well, I got to tell you, I wear headsets a lot. And I'm getting into the time of year, like October, November especially, where I'll have a dent like in my hair, what's left in my head, because I have a headset there so much. So sometimes I just need to let it air out, Adam.
Does it make you angry and then you like shave a line in your head?
Not on purpose.
Alan sent us this story from Andrea Adelson of ESPN, who, as far as I know, is a very nice person. But she, not Alan, I know he's a very nice person. That's factual. Andrea wrote the following about the Carolina-Virginia Tech game on Saturday. She didn't write the headline, but we're going to read the headline anyway. Virginia Tech Hokies without 15 players versus North Carolina Tar Heels. DC Justin Hamilton returns. Andrea goes on to write.
That was quite a rough performance for Justin Hamilton.
Yeah,
first on-site DC job.
Thank goodness he was back. Virginia Tech was without 15 players against North Carolina in Saturday's 56-45 loss to the Tar Heels, including two starting safeties. In addition to missing its starting safeties and three other key contributors in the secondary, Virginia Tech lost starting nickelback after he was ejected in the first quarter for targeting.
That's his own fault.
Yeah, the referees didn't pick someone at random. This is the third straight week the Hokies were significantly shorthanded, though the school has not specified whether players are out because of injuries or coronavirus-related issues. Virginia Tech was missing 21 players against Duke last week and 23 players in its opener against NC State. Well, yeah. So what? Who won the game? The Tar Heels won the game. And this isn't necessarily to single out Andrea, but I also saw this on the ESPN bottom line on Saturday where the little fact about the Carolina-Virginia Tech game was Hokies without 15 players. First of all, no offense to those guys because I'm sure they're all fine athletes. How many of them were actually going to play in the game?
Right. I think about 5 of them had the potential to play. 3 of them were starters. But Carolina was without 3 starters.
Yes, exactly.
But since the Tar Heels weren't out starters because of COVID.
That's not attractive.
Right. It's not something that you would put on the bottom line. So was it a part of the story of the game? Yes. Was it the biggest part of the story of the game? Absolutely not. And that's what I think was frustrating about it, was that it was the way it was framed was that's what everybody left the game talking about, was, oh, Hokies, they were out all those players. No, it wasn't. Maybe Justin Fuente was talking about that. I can understand why he'd want to, because he doesn't want everybody to get mad that he just gave up 656 yards and 56 points. I can understand that. But the story of the game was that the Tar Heels did whatever they wanted offensively. Heck, even the story of the game was Virginia Tech coming back a couple of times from big deficits and making it competitive till the very end when it was a game that they could have been blown out. Story of the game was the Tar Heels keeping their composure against a ranked team and getting a big win, even when they had some adversity in the third quarter. That was the story of the game. All those things involving good things for both sides. It wasn't. Was a piece of it that they had those guys out? Yes, but if you're going to highlight that piece, you need to also highlight the fact that the Tar Heels were without three starters on defense as well.
Well, and also, as we have said before, this is 2020. That's not a story. I'll tell you what's a story. Get back with me when both teams play with full rosters. You put that on the bottom line. Both teams had no one out. Everyone was at 100% full strength. That's news I want to know. Unless you tell me that, I'm going to assume probably both sides had some players out. Probably.
And it's football.
Yeah. And it's 2020 football. So probably both sides had some people out. You know what I do know is that Carolina won the game 56-45 and the Tar Heels are 3-0.
Adam, we've potted again. We're going to have a special celebration. This is Pod 303. We called up Bill Leslie. Before we go, I need to remind you that it would be a shame if you let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. LS Tractor can help you make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. LSTractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? LS Tractor, sponsor of our Player of the Game poll after the games, Adam. I think one of my favorite things about the Player of the Game poll is people immediately complaining about who I did not include in the Player of the Game poll. That reminds me of what I was going to mention earlier in the pod that I forgot. You know what fan base that I've never really thought much about, but turns out they're really angry online? Ohio State. They are so mad that the Tar Heels are ranked higher than them in the football poll. And there's you just wait until we play. We're going to show you. It's like, okay, good. You hadn't played.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're not playing any games.
They're so mad.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You should go look. You should just go if you have some time, because I know most of your day is sitting around doing nothing. Texting emojis with Leon Johnson. You should check it out. They're mad. They're big mad. Big mad online.
Well, okay, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, the Tar Heels have games to play.
Adam, do you have anything else?
No.
All right, we're back later this week. Don't forget, we have video pod on Thursday. We're back audio pod on Friday. And no rapid reactions after Florida State. That's a road game. Plus, it is late. It is a 7:30 kick, so that'll be a late night. That would truly be a pod after dark.
That might be a pod at sunrise.
Yeah. So, no rapid reactions pod after Florida State, but we do have video pod Thursday, Friday audio pod, and then off into the regular rotation again next week, which somehow Tar Heels play NC State in 2 weeks.
Speaking of big mad online.
For now, someone who was big glad on the pod, and that was Leon Johnson. He and the Riz are going to get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hi, I'm Leon Johnson. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meals served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.